from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we'll check in on a number of Supreme Court decisions that came out today, and then it's the battle over classified leaks. The Obama administration has recently been accused of releasing classified information for political gain, including leaks about a secret terrorist kill list and the use of cyber weapons against Iran. The White House denies the charges. We'll discuss recent and historical leaks and the allegations that some disclosures have compromised national security. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In this opening hour, we're going to devote a good deal of time to the battle over classified leaks. That will be the focus of this hour. But some major decisions came down this morning from the United States Supreme Court. And we wanted to bring in Vic Amar, a professor of law and associate dean for academic affairs at UC Davis School of Law, to talk about what these decisions mean and what they particularly mean in terms of California. Vic, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Michael.
I guess the place to begin is with California. The court decided to strike down life without parole for juveniles. It struck down a mandatory and now unconstitutional sentence for juveniles, a life in prison without parole. This is a 5-4 decision. How do you read it?
Well, it's yet another decision in this evolving line where Justice Kennedy has joined with the more liberal justices to create special rules as regards juvenile offenders. So the court had already held that you could not sentence somebody who was under the age of 18 at the time of the crime to death. And then it had also held in an earlier case that for a non-homicide crime, you could not sentence a juvenile offender to life without possibility of parole. So this kind of combines those two and says even in a capital crime, you can't send a juvenile to life without possibility of parole.
And this does affect California.
I don't exactly know exactly what the rules in California are. This case was out of Alabama, and it certainly affects a number of states, but its effect on each state, I think, is going to have to wait a little more examination.
Well, another decision that will have effect on states that was based on Montana has to do with campaign finance reform, and Citizens United. I guess it's going to be free will spending from here on in for, well, the corporations and the labor unions and Nevada gambling casino owners.
Well, this case involved a kind of a state analog to the federal law that was struck down in Citizens United. Citizens United a few years ago held that the federal campaign finance laws that limited how much corporations could expend violated the First Amendment. Montana had a law, and they tried to say, well, things in Montana are a little different. There's a lot more corruption here. So even if a federal law that prohibits corporate expenditures would be unconstitutional, ours should survive. And the Supreme Court said there's no difference between state and federal law. Now, in California, my understanding is that California has not limited corporate expenditures the way the federal government had or the way Montana had. So that ruling probably won't have much effect here in California, but it does make clear that in all 50 states, corporations have the same rights to expend that they do under federal law.
And then ultimately we have the Supreme Court upholding a key part of Arizona's tough immigration law, striking down others as intrusions on federal sovereignty. But the court did back a section of the Arizona law that simply allows police to check the immigration status of people they stop.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, some headlines will read, court strikes down key parts of Arizona immigration law, and other headlines will read, court upholds key aspect of Arizona law. So the provision that got upheld was the one that allowed, indeed directed cops to make inquiry of certain individuals to see if they were here unlawfully. And the court said that there's not evidence of racial profiling yet, and there's not evidence that Arizona cops are kind of detaining people for long periods of time while they check on their federal immigration status. So absent those two things, that provision can go ahead and be enforced in the meanwhile. But there were other provisions of the Arizona SB 1070, including provisions that made it an independent state crime to be in Arizona out of status under the federal immigration laws, a provision that regulated people who sought employment as opposed to regulating the employers themselves. Those provisions were struck down as inconsistent with what the federal government had done. Interestingly, though, there wasn't really that broad disagreement 5-4 on the Arizona case. Even the liberals on the court allowed the provision to stop and question to be upheld.
Yeah, but I understand that Justices Scalia and Thomas wanted to have the whole law upheld. I mean, all provisions.
Yeah. Those two did. Justice Alito had a little middle position where he would have upheld two of the four, not three of the four, the way the majority did. Struck down two of the four, not striking down three of the four, the way the majority did. Justice Scalia's opinion is perhaps the most intellectually noteworthy because it lays out a very broad authority for states to regulate immigration as long as the federal government hasn't explicitly told them they can't.
And Justice Kagan was recused in this case.
That was 5-3. That's right.
Well, Vic Amar, thank you so much for giving us a good highlighting of what the Supreme Court decided this morning. I appreciate very much your being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Vikram Amar, again, is professor of law and associate dean for academic affairs at UC Davis School of Law. And it should go noted that the Citizens United applies to states. The juvenile justice provision being struck down does apply to California. And when the health care decision is decided upon, we expect it on Thursday, we will, of course, cover it here on Forum. In the meantime, we're going to talk about classified leaks. The Obama administration has been accused of releasing classified information. I know many of you have been following this story. This includes leaks about the secret terrorist kill list and the use of cyber weapons against Iran for political gain. And there's been bipartisan criticism, including from California, Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, as well as Michigan Senator Carl Levin, for example, and both Senator John McCain, who has said that the leaks are intended for the purpose of helping President Obama secure re-election, and President Obama's presumptive Republican nominee opponent, Mitt Romney, have called for a special prosecutor. Presently, the Department of Justice and the FBI are conducting investigations. The White House has denied all the charges. This opening forum hour, we want to discuss the recent leaks, along with some historical perspective on the topic of leaks, which we hope to get to as well. And let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. I want to welcome first old friend Jane Wales, President and CEO of the World Affairs Council, former Senior Director of the National Security Council, who's with us this morning from the Aspen Institute. Welcome, Jane.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Mark Thiessen, who is in Buffalo, scholar and at the American Enterprise Institute, and a Washington Post columnist. He was a member of the White House senior staff under President George W. Bush. Welcome, Mark Thiessen.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Thank you. And Peter Bergen is also with us this morning from the nation's capital, CNN's national security analyst, director at the New America Foundation, and author of Manhunt, the 10-year search for bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad. Peter Bergen, good to have you with us.
Morning.
Good morning. Let me actually begin with you, Peter Bergen, before we get into your perspective on the leaks, and I think to some extent it's a perspective that says that there's too much blowing up here. What about Dr. Shakil Afridi, who essentially was involved in helping to disclose the fact that Osama bin Laden was in Pakistan and has now been sentenced to 33 years for high treason? This was someone who was outed, so it goes again because of leaks.
Well, actually, that's completely wrong. The reason that it's wrong on several counts. Afridi was outed not because of leaks, but because the Pakistanis did their own investigation of what was going on. And the first story that came out about this was by the Pakistan-based correspondent for the Guardian newspaper. It was not a leak from the U.S. side. It was, people inside the intelligence agencies in Pakistan. So let's just sort of start with that. Secondly, he hasn't been charged with treason. He's been charged with helping a militant group. The court case that happened in the tribal regions was nothing to do with treason. Now, this may well be trumped-up charges, but the charge is that he helped a local militant group. So there's a lot of sort of fog out there about this issue, and with people who don't really actually understand the substance of these stories. Afridi, it's nothing to do with an American leak, the situation he's in.
Was Catherine Bigelow, the Hurt Locker, brought into the picture soon after? And was there information about the seals given out by this White House administration? Again, part of the charges that have been going forward as far as the...
Well, they had a meeting with her, anybody listening to this call can read the minutes of the meeting. I mean, there was no classified information exchanged. I mean, if I was the administration, whether it was the Bush administration or any other administration, and an Oscar-winning director was making a film about a particular event, I think I would want to make sure that the event was recounted in a somewhat accurate way. So, I mean, my outrage level about that is pretty minimal.
Well, your outrage level is pretty minimal also about the Iranians knowing about a cyber attack by the United States and Israel. In fact, I read your article and you said, how do swirling centrifuges hurt U.S. security? They sort of knew, I think, as you point out, that the United States and Israel was certainly planning to do what they could to undermine.
If the premise is that these leaks is that they undermine American national security, in the cases of both the cyber attacks on Iran and the drone strikes against al-Qaeda, the fact that these are happening are well known to the enemy. In fact, Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, made a speech, a public speech 2 years ago in Tehran saying that, we're under cyber attack by our enemies. And it was widely discussed in the computer expert community that the only people that could build the Stuxnet virus, which is the name attached to the first waves of viruses attacking the Iranians, was a state. And the only states with the technical know-how and the capability to do this and the motive were Israel and the United States. So I don't want to take away from David Sanger's reporting because I think he filled in a lot of detail. But the main thrust of all this was known to our to United States enemies already. It was not something that was a secret. It was an open fact.
Well, what about in Yemen, the underwear bombing and the disclosure from the administration allegedly?
Yeah, I think that is more troubling. I mean, we don't know the full story about that report, which first surfaced on the Associated Press and basically said that a plot had been interrupted by the United States to blow up an airliner potentially heading towards the United States, and this plot was being organized by al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. No one on this phone call, I think, can know the exact details of to what extent that interrupted an ongoing operation, but my supposition is it may well have. And I think that is troubling, particularly since the bomb maker in all this is somebody who clearly is still out there and clearly poses a threat to the United States. And it's now a matter of public record that a spy that was inserted into this group of Saudi, of maybe with a British passport, was pulled out.
Well, Saudi mole, it was, apparently.
Yeah, and it seems to be the first time that a spy, rather than an informer, which I think there's a sort of distinction between the two, was actually inserted into an al-Qaeda affiliate. And so I think that's a legitimate area of inquiry.
Again, we're talking to Peter Bergen, who is CNN's national security analyst and directs the New American Foundation. His new book is Manhunt, The 10-Year Search for Bin Laden. I want to bring Jane Wales in as president and CEO of the World Affairs Council, former senior director of the National Security Council. And Jane, first of all, there's been a lot of charges here that this has been orchestrated, these leaks. In fact, Senator McCain has said it's all for reelection. It's all to make Obama look good and look tough. And your take on that?
Well, they're sort of on three levels, I think I'd respond. One is that there was an immediate assumption. This is sort of a high degree of cynicism. There was an immediate assumption that the reporting of somebody like David Sanger was not just extremely good reporting, but instead a case of leaks coming out on a very purposeful and orchestrated way and landing on his lap. So that's probably a little insulting to Mr. Sanger. But secondly, I'm no expert on electoral politics, but the assumption that this is beneficial to President Obama seems flawed to me. Liberals who support him are not pleased by the degree to which he has kept going and, in fact, ratcheted up some Bush administration programs, like the drone, like keeping Guantanamo alive, like pursuing the assassination of an American citizen, and cyber warfare, which may concern them greatly. On the other hand, if you take a look at moderates, they may be much more concerned about the arms control implications, the precedential effects of using employing this kind of warfare. And I just can't imagine that Republicans are sitting around and weighing their options based on who's tougher on Iran. I suspect they're much more focused The philosophies that the two candidates have on the role of government and in Americans' daily lives. And of course, you know, it's the economy, stupid, remains an apt phrase. So I'm not sure I follow the logic of those who are saying it's politically motivated on the one hand. On the other hand, when you look at what came out of the Sanger book, at least, it was both the drones and it was Stuxnet. And in both cases, the cat was out of the bag. You know, the Iranians had gotten a hold of a surveillance drone back in December, and Stuxnet wasn't the initial program. The initial program was something called Operation Olympic Games, and then we got to the point that, you know, somehow the worm got out, the virus got out by you know, somebody taking his laptop out and plugging into the internet, and then suddenly there was Stuxnet spread around the world, and at that point the cat was out of the bag.
Do you see the analogy that many, frankly, on the left are making, that the Obama administration, in for whatever reason, not being able to control these leaks, as they've been called, or these things leaking out, however harmful they may be, that it seems terribly hypocritical to go after somebody like Bradley Manning and WikiLeaks?
I think they're going after those they can go after. I think this administration is pretty tough on these disclosures. You know, I think the key is to think through how this information gets out. You know, is it really a leak that drops in your lap? You know, Peter Bergen is going to know more than I about this, but, you know, my sense is you get this situation in which a reporter gathers a bunch of facts, makes some suppositions, goes to folks within an administration and says, this is what I know, what's right, what's wrong. And the folks in the administration then have to ask themselves the question, which is more dangerous, verifying this but getting it right, or letting them publish something that's just off? Let me give you an example. When I was, this is way back in the Carter administration, during the Iran hostage crisis, there were three hostages that had gotten out and were in the British embassy, and we were trying to get them out of Iran. This was, as you can imagine, very closely held information. Suddenly, one American and one Canadian journalist came to us. They had the story. We had a choice between denying it or refusing to comment and having them publish the story, or confirming it in exchange for their holding it until these three people were out of Iranian arms airspace. We chose the latter, and those three lives were saved. So this is all just to say, or preserved, but this is all just to say that information isn't always, sometimes it's a much more circuitous route with much less sort of political purposes than is assumed.
Again, Jane Wales is with us from the Aspen Institute this morning, President and CEO of the World Affairs Council and former Senior Director of the National Security Council. We also have Mark Thiessen on the line, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and a columnist with the Washington Post. He was a member of the White House senior staff under George W. Bush. We're hearing a lot about Mark Thiessen when the Bush administration gave classified notes to Bob Woodward of national security meetings and overthrowing the Taliban. Is there comparability here?
I think that's probably a very different situation because they gave that information long after the event happened. I think it's a caricature to suggest that, well, it's not really a leak because it didn't just drop in David Sanger's lap. Then most reporting doesn't take place that way. But it's very clear if you read that story on the cyber attack that the White House actively cooperated with Sanger on that story and, quite frankly, on his book. You have a situation where the quote is coming from members of the president's national security team who are in the Situation Room, and they're even quoting the president saying, should we shut this thing down? There's a very small circle of people who were in the Situation Room at the time that took place. And another point is that people are saying, well, the Iranians already knew this was already an open secret. It wasn't really an open secret. The Iranians suspected that it was the U.S. and Israel were involved. But it's a very different thing to have the President of the United States confirm on the front page of the New York Times that he launched a cyber attack, which is really, it can be arguably, an act of war.
The Pentagon says it is an act of war.
Well,
which means, in effect, that we are at war with Iran, possibly.
That's the seriousness of it. And look, I know Peter seems to be very complacent about all of this, but the fact is that the head of the director of National Intelligence says these are the worst leaks he has seen in his 30 years in the intelligence community. Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat from California, says it's the worst she's seen in the 11 years that she's been on the Intelligence Committee. So these are not conservatives who are arguing this for political gain.
No, we're here in California, and I want to Senator Feinstein said it's called it an avalanche of leaks, and she said it puts the nation in jeopardy, and you agree.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a very, very serious matter. And this is why you have a number of people who are calling for a special counsel to investigate this. If the president has nothing to hide, and if it really was they're not behind these things, they should have no problem having a special counsel look into this. The fact is that most of the people who are objecting to a special counsel today for this, which was these very, very serious leaks, were the ones who were running around screaming for a special counsel when it came to the Valerie Plame matter. The Valerie Plame's outing was a traffic violation in comparison to these leaks. She wasn't even a covert operative for 5 years when her name was released.
Of course, the DOJ and the FBI the DOJ and the FBI are both investigating, are they not?
Yeah, but you know, the president made the decision to one of the investigators that he's appointed is a political appointee who gave money to his Senate race and his presidential campaign, helped him vet appointees for possible candidates for vice president of the United States. Has called him a legend in a New York Times profile. Can you imagine during the Valerie Plame investigation, if Karl Rove had been cleared by a Bush political appointee who had given to both his gubernatorial and his presidential campaigns, helped him vet vice presidential candidates, no one would have believed it. They would have said it was a political cover-up. So it's in the White House's interest, actually. If the president really believes these accusations are outrageous and wrong, then it's in his interest to have a completely independent investigation of this matter.
He said they were offensive. He's on record as saying that. Mark Thiessen is with the American Enterprise Institute, Washington Post columnist, and was a member of the White House senior staff under President George W. Bush. We're going to have to say goodbye to Peter Bergen. Peter Bergen, you want a final word in here, especially in response to what we just heard from Mark Thiessen?
Well, just to sort of introduce another idea into this discussion, you know, there is a sort of public interest in a discussion, as you just mentioned. It is the Pentagon's view that a serious cyber attack on the United States is an act of war. And so are we at war with Iran? Is this something in the public interest that we should understand in a more meaningful way? Are there downsides for the United States to be involved in cyber attacks on other states? Are there downsides, by the way, to the Obama and arguing against the Obama administration here? Even using conservative estimates, 1,900 people have died in drone strikes under President Obama. We sometimes execute people in the United States who turn out to be innocent. It defies, kind of any plausible reckoning that all 1,900 of these people are actually, militants posing a threat to the United States. And a public discussion of the drone program, which again is the most public covert program in American history, but a greater discussion of the legal framework around it and how it is actually operationalized, I think, is in the public interest.
Well, I'm glad you brought that to our attention in the way you did, and I thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Peter Bergen, again, CNN national security analyst with us from D.C. He also directs the New America Foundation and is the author of Manhunt, the 10-year search for bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad. We're going to continue this discussion. We're going to invite you to join us in the discussion. In fact, we'd like to hear from you if you have some thoughts to add to the mix or would like to bring up any questions that are on your mind. Feel free to do that. Our toll-free number is available, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome you joining the program and invite you to do so again toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have on our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or go to our Facebook page. Let's hear from you. When we return, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Obama administration has lately been accused of releasing classified information, including leaks about a secret terrorist kill list and the use of cyber weapons against Iran for political gain. The White House denies the charges, and we're discussing recent and, well, historical leaks as well, and the allegations that some of these disclosures have compromised national security. We spoke earlier with Peter Bergen, CNN's national security analyst, and Mark Thiessen is with us, scholar for the American Enterprise Institute, and Jane Wales, president and CEO of the World Affairs Council. You two are joined to, are invited to join the program, and we welcome your calls and emails. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. If you'd like to weigh in on this and join the conversation with any questions or comments you might have, you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or go to our Facebook page. And I'm wondering, before we go to our callers and emails here, Jane Wales, about the fact that the Obama administration has had more prosecutions for the showing of classified information with the media than all previous administrations combined. That's according to Uri Friedman in Foreign Policy. And they have gone back to invoke the 1917 Espionage Act to do so.
Yeah, no, this administration is particularly tough on this issue, and it doesn't seem, as far as I can tell, to have any kind of tolerance for leaking. I think it's just it would be awfully important to get to the facts of this matter, because the debate is based on a set of assumptions as to what exactly happened and what the motivations might have been. So it's a hard conversation to have without clarity on those two things. I wanted to just comment on something Peter said and something Mark said as well. Peter Bergen noted that you know, we're not clear on the legal framework for the merits of the wisdom of the drone program or a program of cyber attacks. And I think he's absolutely right. I think these are very hard issues, not black and white at all. And I would go so far as to say, it is not a positive thing for the Obama administration for this information to get out. Let's put it that way. I can't imagine that they saw that as being in their interest.
But now, let me ask you, Mark, just a quick question, Jay, because you did serve a National Security Council. If a leak comes from an executive, there's really little the national security agencies or, for that matter, Congress can do about it, isn't there?
What do you mean by executives? I mean, if the president...
If it comes from the president's administration or it comes from the executive branch or the president himself, particularly the president himself.
If it comes from the president itself, it is declassified by definition.
Automatically.
The president has authority to declassify any information.
So the president gives information to David Sanger on his own free will and autonomy. It immediately becomes declassified, even if it's classified?
It's declassified at that point. But I don't think that's what the accusation is. I think the accusation is this is happening at the level of, for example, the National Security Advisor or undersecretaries and assistant secretaries. And that is quite a different matter. But again, was the reporting based on leaks, or were bits and pieces of information verified that added up to a story? And I just think that's very important information to get to. What the administration is doing, as far from what I understand, is that they've named, I mean, the Attorney General has named two U.S. attorneys, one of whom was a George W. Bush appointee. The FBI is also investigating. As you know, Robert Mueller has served under both Democrats and Republicans. I don't think people question his integrity. And the Director of National Intelligence has been particularly tough on this, James Clapper, as well. I'm not sure I understand why one wants to, of course, the legal counsel law doesn't exist anymore. So this would be a case, I guess, of passing a new law in order to get to the bottom of this, and I just don't know that that's necessary.
Well, there's a tough bill that's supposedly being crafted, mm-hmm. in the process of being crafted, perhaps even as we speak. And I'm wondering if I could go back to Mark Thiessen. What's the journalist's responsibility in all this? If as you say, we're putting the country into peril with these kind of leaks or putting this information together or whatever and having a cover story in the New York Times, how much does David Sanger have culpability?
Oh, sure. I think he has a lot. Look, I've criticized my own newspaper, The Washington Post, for publishing things that shouldn't be made public. But look, the idea that this is not beneficial to the president is laughable. The fact is that if you look at the public polling, the vast majority of Americans support the drone strikes, including self-described liberal Democrats. 56% of self-described liberal Democrats support the drone strikes. The independents that Obama is trying to reach out to and get to vote for him in this election, they support the drone strikes. So this is information that is being put out there to show President Obama is a strong commander-in-chief. I mean, if there's one pattern that goes through all of these different leaks, they all make President Obama look good. You mentioned that his administration has prosecuted more leaks than any administration. Well, that may be because there are more leaks in his administration than in any previous administration. And most of the things that he's prosecuting, like WikiLeaks, like Bradley Manning, are from outside groups that have been leaking information to embarrass the United States. These leaks are designed to make the President of the United States look good. Whether David Sanger is a good reporter or not, I assume he is, doesn't make it any less serious that senior administration officials are confirming for the New York Times the fact that the United States has launched cyber attacks on Iran. And just to show you how serious this is, just look at the leaks that have happened in the last week. Not the ones we're talking about here. On last week, the Washington Post reported on the front page that not only were we behind the Stuxnet virus, but they confirmed, quoting senior administration officials who asked not to be named because of they're discussing clandestine or covert operations, that we were behind the flame virus as well. Then the New York Times last week, this is the headline in the New York Times last week, CIA said to be steering arms to Syrian opposition. Again, senior administration officials quoted by the New York Times confirming that we have CIA operatives in Turkey helping vet which Syrian rebel groups are going to be getting weapons. Then, after that, you had a AP story last week also quoting senior U.S. officials who spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss clandestine operation, saying that the U.S. is mulling new covert raids in Pakistan. This is 1 week of news that we had in the last week. This is not; these aren't leaks. This is a flood, and it's got to be stopped. And the only way you stop it is to have some consequences for releasing the covert national security secrets of the United States.
Yeah, there was just this morning a story about Vice President Biden memos of his that were supposedly somewhat classified on Afghanistan being released. I want to get our callers involved in this. And by the way, you can also, of course, email us. In fact, here's a listener who wants to register some thoughts. Rhett writes, how ironic that while Obama has taken such pains to discriminate against and prosecute leakers and whistleblowers and even seems to be planning to execute Julian Assange and Bradley Manning, when it comes to someone in his own administration leaking classified material for political purposes, he comes to their defense. This is Chicago-style corruption at its finest. Let's hear what some of the rest of you have to say or ask. David, we begin with you. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think this is all kind of like a tempest in a teapot sort of thing. It would appear that every time the president tries to exercise any executive privilege, which past presidents have had, you've got a Republican saying, foul, oh, he's undermining the country and we're all going to die because of this. And I tend to think that when the gentleman is saying that this is all politics, it's sort of like, well, hello, pot, this is a kettle, you're black.
Well, Jane Wells, how do we know it's not all politics?
Well, let me just start by saying that the minute one gets into an analysis or discussion of the personal motivations or the motivations of any individual, and particularly an individual you do not know, but you know, neither Mark nor I were in the room or on the line for any of these conversations. And I always feel we're going well beyond our knowledge the minute we start commenting on their motivations.
Well, Senator McCain must be a mind reader because he said it's all about reelection and to make Obama look good.
It's all in the eyes of the beholder, I believe. So, but secondly, you know, where Mark and I do agree is on the seriousness of this. I'm very concerned about the disclosures. What I just can't say with certainty is that I know that the motivations are the motivations everybody involved says are not their motivations. So that's the hard thing for me in this conversation. Finally, I think it'd be really helpful to define terms, you know, what we mean by leaks versus disclosures, you know, versus there are lots of different ways in which information is conveyed to the American public. And there's a huge range from very noble choices to very to loathsome choices. You know, sort of the settling of scores. So you know, again, I just love to be kind of both clearer on the facts and clearer on the definitions.
Well, Mark Thiessen, I suppose you know there's a whole continuum here in terms of what's appropriate for what we define as leaks. I think we're defining mainly leaks in conjunction with recent leaks of or what have been described or characterized as leaks of classified material. But you can prosecute all of them, and then you wouldn't have had the Pentagon Papers, and you wouldn't have warrantless wiretapping program that went on in 2005. Or you can simply you know, say that they're all harmful and it would be harmful and not in the public interest not to have these disclosures. I mean, there's got to be some medium range there, doesn't there?
No, there really isn't. I mean, those disclosures, as you described, are incredibly harmful to United States national security, and there really is no middle ground. And it doesn't matter what the leaker's motivation is, whether it's to settle scores or to do something they think is noble. Classified information is classified information. It's classified for a reason. And you are, unless, as we discussed earlier, the President of the United States personally authorizes the declassification or some competent authority authorizes the declassification of the information, it's classified information, and you cannot share it with the New York Times. It's just that simple. There's no difference between a leak and a disclosure. A disclosure is a leak. And so the question here is, did the President of the United States authorize the people who were in that room and discussing the Stuxnet virus, personally authorize them to cooperate with the New York Times, in which case it's not unlawful, but we ought to know that. We ought to know that the president personally authorized the disclosure of an ongoing covert operation in order to aid his presidential campaign, because that's what it does. Or those people broke the law.
Well, it's not only go ahead, Jane Wells. Yeah,
I think it's the dot 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 in order to affect his presidential prospects. I just don't think we know that. I just don't think anybody on this call knows that.
We know that all the disclosures make him look good. I mean, you're right. I can't sit there and look into the heart of the president's motivation, but you can look at the effect of all the disclosures.
But you know, one of the things that surprises me in this is, like I said, Senator McCain saying that it's all for reelection and to make President Obama look good. And even on the left, you had indicated criticism about this from Senator Feinstein, but also Glenn Greenwald, you know, who's perhaps one of the most prominent liberal, quote-unquote, or progressive critics of them all, saying this is all self-serving to the Obama administration and just propaganda. So it is coming from both sides. Here's a listener in Sebastopol who says, I think the outrage is misplaced. It should be not about the leaks. Our government should be more transparent. It should be directed at the acts revealed. As with the WikiLeaks video release, killing of civilians and journalists in Iraq, the focus was and is on punishing the exposers, not the killers. The drone program and other acts of war on other countries should be addressed by the entire country, and whether this is the course Americans want to take. I want to take a course to bring some more callers in. John, you're next. Welcome.
Thank you. There's been a steady trend in the United States since the Second World War towards more secretiveness, more emphasis on national security and less emphasis on democracy and the public's right to know. And the entire premise of the discussion that I'm listening to, it sounds as if any leak is bad. However, the people of the United States and the people of the world need to know what's going on, and we don't have to worry as much about our security as many people say we do. We are the most powerful country in the world, and we have this incredible military and intelligence advantage over everybody else. So why are we so paranoid? We would do a lot better if we had more freedom of information, fewer restrictions to the public's right to know, and less of this paranoia about national security at all costs. And I'm especially upset at your representative from the American Enterprise Institute making all these claims. I don't see any reason that the disclosures benefit anybody. Going back to the Nixon administration when the Watergate disclosures came out, I heard that. That didn't do Richard Nixon's administration any good. And I don't think they do the Obama administration any good. But why are we so fixated on this? It's almost a psychosis.
Mark Thiessen, I think you've just been given a diagnosis.
Apparently, I guess so. Paranoia. I don't know where you were on September 11th, but I was in the Pentagon. And I had good friends who were killed in that attack. And this country came under attack just a decade ago.
Yeah.
They brought down the Twin Towers. They hit our nation's capital. They intended, if it hadn't been for the people on Flight 93 that brought that plane down in Shanksville, they would have taken that out of the White House or the United States Capitol. So I don't think it's paranoid to be concerned about the national security of the United States. And the fact is, since that time, we have disrupted literally dozens and dozens of attacks that were planned on this country. The terrorist plan, KSM, after 9/11, he planned to bring down the Library Tower in Los Angeles in a second wave of attack. They planned to blow up the U.S. consulate in Karachi and our embassy and our Marine camp in Djibouti. They planned to replicate 9/11 in London by bringing down Big Ben and flying airplanes into Heathrow Airport and other places in downtown London. And since the Obama administration came in, they have tried three times to get underwear bombs, both cartridge bombs and underwear bombs, on the planes headed for the United States. So you may think we're paranoid for being concerned about this, but the fact is the terrorists continue to try and attack us. Iran is building a nuclear weapon that, if it gets its hands on that technology and that capability, will allow it. And by the way, the Iranian government is the government that was behind the embassy bombings in East Africa. They trained Al Qaeda for those operations. Do you think if we do not take out their capability, which we're using cyber attacks to slow them down, that they're not going to, if they get a nuclear weapon, they're not going to use that as cover to do more terrorist attacks? So paranoia is an absurd charge.
What about the other caller's point about the need for more transparency? You say what to that, Mark Thiessen?
Well, you know, there's a reason things are classified. I mean, one of the challenges we face in this war, especially with the terrorist threat, is that this is an enemy unlike any we have faced before. We had a very good system for dealing with intelligence when it came to foreign countries with armies, navies, and air forces. When Saddam Hussein marshaled his army on the border of Kuwait, we could, with a degree of certainty, discern when he was going to put that army over and invade another country. The terrorists, when you have 19 men with box cutters who are taking three passenger planes and turning them into missiles, their information is known only to a handful of people. And so you have to have new ways of getting intelligence, new ways of dealing with these challenges. And we're trying to adapt to a very, very dangerous new world. And a lot of that, the only way to do that is through covert operations. And for those operations to be successful, they have to remain covert. When you expose, you know, when we expose the fact that we have a mole recruited by British intelligence that's infiltrated Al Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the terrorist organization that three times has tried to attack us in the last 3 years with plane bombs, that is very damaging to our national security. And whoever let that information out ought to be in jail.
I think we're in agreement on that, Jane Wales, that is particularly troubling, what happened with respect to Yemen and the mole.
Actually, can I just sort of step back for one quick moment?
Yes, sure.
I think it's a general matter. Mark and I agree on how serious it is to disclose information that is classified. In particular, when you're midway through, when you're still in the midst of a program, and in particular when lives are at stake, I don't think there's any disagreement on that. The disagreement is as to whether or not there were a set of purposeful disclosures without regard to those concerns. So I just really want to be clear on that before we go further. What? The caller raised questions about whether we're paranoid in the sense that we classify everything that moves, right? That we get maybe, you know, we use classifications too much. And I suspect that's true, and that's been true for quite a while. That's not a recent phenomenon. I remember being in government at one point and being handed a file which included New York Times articles that were blacked out, as though you could classify a New York Times article. So these kinds of things do happen. There is an overzealousness sometimes on the part of those who would love to put everything in a secret box. But on the other hand, that doesn't justify disclosing information, particularly information that could be harmful to the U.S.
We'll bring more of our callers aboard here. Nathan, join us. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. Given the coordinated releases like this, I just can't believe that this is not
an explicit PR campaign on the part of the administration, and that I don't think that anybody is under any illusion that it was ever secret from the Iranians that they were being attacked by the U.S. or some people blamed Israel, and it doesn't matter that much. And really, if it's going to be, if we're going to do something we're embarrassed about, then classifying it doesn't really help. We shouldn't be doing that thing. That's all.
Okay. I'm glad you said, had you say, and I thank you for that. And we'll have another say from you. Philip, join us. Hi.
Hi. I just wondered if there's a possibility that if the disclosure was intentional, if it wasn't a tactical, strategic, military disclosure. Sometimes that's done. That's been done on, you know, forever in administrations. When you seek tactical advantage by disclosure.
Some thoughts along those lines, Jane Wales. It can be tactical and often is to leak information.
Yep. No, I think the fact is we don't know. And that's why, you know, having two U.S. attorneys look into it will be helpful. Let me go back to the last caller who asked about, who pointed to the Iranian situation. The reality is that for a long time, the president pursued a policy of ambiguity. So they were sort of a scientist was assassinated, the centrifuges sped up, they then slowed down. One couldn't be clear as to who was responsible, whether anyone was responsible in the case of the centrifuges. And that ambiguity served the U.S. government well. That was helpful. Removing that ambiguity removes a very important tool out of the president's tool chest. Now, set apart from that, the question of whether it was right or wrong, wise or unwise, legal or illegal, that's a different matter, and that's the matter that Peter Bergen would like to see a debate about.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about the fact, Mark Thiessen, you had mentioned your own paper, The Washington Post, often revealing things of a classified nature. I think it was Charles Krauthammer in The Washington Post who called all of this that we're talking about White House press releases. I mean, again, he seems to be somehow knowledgeable of motivation there, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, you look at the impact. Are there any of these stories embarrassing to the president? Do any of these make him look indecisive or make him look, vacillating? They don't. They all make him look like he's the strong commander in chief in the room, in the Situation Room, making the hard decisions. I mean, if you read that story about the drone he's personally choosing the targets on the kill list. I mean, these things, all of these things make the president look strong and a strong commander-in-chief. The irony of it is that they seem to be intent, I agree with Charles, they seem to be intentionally leaking all this information to make the president look good. What they have done from a political standpoint is harm themselves politically because it's backfired on them, because now they've given his opponents an issue on national security that he's endangering a national security by leaking. So here's the guy who killed Osama bin Laden, who killed Anwar al-Awlaki, who's running the drone campaigns, who's adopted essentially 90% of the Bush counterterrorism policy, and has a strong case to make that he's got a strong national security record in that respect, and he's undermined that as a political advantage by leaking all this information, by overreaching in order to make himself look good, and now he's under fire for endangering national security by leaking information about what he's doing.
But you agree, though, with what Peter Bergen said earlier, that that if you separate these leaks, as they've been called, the most dangerous one or the most serious one, profoundly serious, is the planned attack on the United States from Yemen that, in revealing that there was a mole, damaged intelligence and maybe put other operatives at risk.
I think they're all terribly serious. I mean, the Pakistani doctor, that Peter disputes whether that came from the United States. Look, if this man was working with the CIA to locate bin Laden, an operation that we kept from the Pakistanis, it had to initially initiate somewhere from the United States, because only the people who knew about it were the doctor and the CIA handlers and the people who were involved in the operation. When you burn a source like that, and somebody, you look around the world at all the dangerous places we have, from North Korea to Yemen to Pakistan, Afghanistan, all these places where we are threatened. And we are going out every day and asking people to cooperate with us and to help us get information about the threats to our country. Who's going to do that when they see on the front pages that one of the people who worked with us and who took that risk and stepped forward and said, yes, I'll help, is now has his life in danger because he's been burned, because he's been exposed. When we ask foreign governments to cooperate with us in situations like the Stuxnet or the flame viruses, and it gets out in the public into the public airwaves, that makes it less likely that other governments are going to cooperate with us when we need them. So this is it's not just that it's putting lives in danger; it is hurting us, our ability to recruit people and to work with foreign countries to protect the national security of the United States.
In agreement with that, Jane Wells?
I agree that it is not in the U.S. interest to put this information out. I think it is a an accusation, an assumption that is not supported by fact, that if this information was consciously put out for the purpose of improving the president's domestic political prospects.
Well, I'm looking
there's
at
no some... evidence. There's, you know, this has been just sort of a series of assertions.
I'm looking at some assertions by some of our listeners. I just want to get them into the mix here. Here's Doug who writes, the attack at 9/11 was successful because of failures in the Bush administration and the intelligence community. Had the American people been more aware of what the intelligence community knew and was trying to get the Bush administration to take more seriously, maybe some alert citizen would have noticed suspicious behavior missed by airport security. Actually, a suspicious citizen did who worked for the FBI. On our website, listener writes, we seem to have at most a confirmation of known information and facts with people placing a label such as leak or worst leaks ever seen. Please identify specific information that was unknown before the leak. Show how it caused damage, what damage it caused. Peter Bergen basically pointed out this topic is just political spin. Final word here with seconds left on that from you, Peter, Mark Thiessen.
I just explained how it hurts our national security. I mean, I think Peter is underestimating the damage caused by these leaks. This is very serious stuff when you have ongoing covert operations that are being exposed, and when you have sources and methods being exposed, it hurts our national security terribly.
Well, that's going to be the final word, and I want to thank our guests. Thanks to you, Mark Thiessen, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and Washington Post columnist, a member of the White House senior staff under President George W. Bush. Thanks also to Jane Wales, who spent the hour with us, President and CEO of the World Affairs Council, located here in San Francisco, former senior director of the National Security Council. And I thank Peter Bergen, with us earlier from the nation's capital, CNN's national security analyst. Thanks also to Vic Amar, who briefed us at the top of the hour on the recent Supreme Court decisions, and we'll go more into that as the week progresses, certainly take up health care when that decision comes down. I want to thank you, our listeners. Thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.